CITR.
The 38th Annual Vancouver Folk Music Festival comes to Jericho Beach Park July 17th to 19th. Over 60 acts from legends Taj Mahal and Richard Thompson to Blind Pilot, Phosphorescent, also including Annie Lou, Frazee Ford, Jen Grant, and Jasper Sloan Yip, artists from over 14 countries. There's a world of amazing music coming to your own backyard. Early bird ticket deadline is June 15th. Check it out at thefestival.bc.ca.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
CITR presents a night of guitar pop with Vancouver shoegaze lounge specialist Ace Martins, atmospheric indie rock from Mission's Western Jaguar, and spunky power pop The Sylvia Platters on Friday, June 12th at the Princeton Pub. Cover is $5 at the door. Music starts at 9 p.m.
The 38th Annual Vancouver Folk Music Festival comes to Jericho Beach Park July 17th to 19th. Over 60 acts from legends Taj Mahal and Richard Thompson to Blind Pilot, Phosphorescent, also including Annie Lou, Frazee Ford, Jen Grant, and Jasper Sloan Yip, artists from over 14 countries. There's a world of amazing music coming to your own backyard. Early bird ticket deadline is June 15th. Check it out at thefestival.bc.ca.
Is it gonna pull through?
I'm not sure, honey. It has been 46 years.
I know, but I just love it so much.
It's okay. It's going to a better place. And so are we.
When did I get older? Someone tell me why.
After 46 years on the second floor of the Student Union Building, CITR and Discorder will be moving into a new station in the new Student Union Building.
Join us on Friday, June 26th, as we throw the biggest wake for a radio station you've ever seen.
The party goes from 7 to 10 p.m. RSVP at citr.ca/newstationcelebration.
See you there!
On June 21st, the Bill Reed Gallery of Northwest Coast Art and the Red Slam Jam Society invite you to join radio host Gennarji O'Sullivan and Quiwa Jones to celebrate the summer solstice and National Aboriginal Day. Join us from 1 till 5 on location at the Bill Reed Gallery of Northwest Coast Art. Our hosts will speak to artists and knowledge holders sharing the spectacular art and cultures of the Northwest Coast. Admission is free. Contact us at 604-682-3455 for more information or go to www.billreedgallery.ca. Thank you, Gaila Kessler.
If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure and then again
I would spend them with you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I looked around enough to know that you're the one I want to go through time with. If I had a box just for wishes and dreams that had never come true, the box would be empty except for the memory of how they were answered by you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. Looked around enough to know that you're the one I want to go through time
with. Good morning and welcome to Language to Language. If you're squeaking in the background, that's not my joints. That's a chair I'm sitting on. So in Haida, Kaunsanga Hinudikya Ang. In Haida, I am called Kaunsanga. Tatlanas Hat Ayudijim. I'm a Haida Tatlanas crest. That's an eagle with two heads. Gatsakastiukwalakm. That means I'm of the eagle half of the population. Kuala is the whole body of Haidas. So I'm from the eagle side. There's the other side's raven. Woodrow Morrison. Hinudia Achat I Kilkya Am. In English, I'm called Woodrow Morrison, actually Junior. The Au Chayang Hinu Hatkil, Virginia Cloud Hinu Maidname Guy. Laga Hidan. My mother in Haida, it's actually a Tlingit name, was called Chayang. Her maiden name was Virginia Cloud from her Scottish grandfather. And then Hidan means that her name was. She went home in 1980. Wagyan de Hung Hansanan, Woodrow Morrison Sr. Kyagan. Iskan Tladai Hatkil Kyagan. My father was called Tladai. That's a big man inside in Haida. And his English name was Woodrow Morrison Sr. And his mother, Dinanu Viola Nakatla, Nung Hangundaz Hinu Dinan Kyam. So my grandmother, Viola Nakatla, was her maiden name. In Haida, she was called Nung Hangundals. That's a deep sea rolling wave. Well, I just found this thing about my name, Woodrow. They keep getting my horoscope wrong, too. They keep saying I'm a nice guy, and then they lie about it. Anyway, it says root of Woodrow, origin Old English, meaning a wooded hedge. Well, I was told that it meant a row of houses in the woods that lived in, you know. But anyway, a wooded hedge, that sounds okay. It says majestic, one who hears all but says nothing. I don't hear anything and I say everything. Personality on the cutting edge of events. Genuine, known for his charitable deeds. Style, one who shines like a star. Ability, he is a storehouse of knowledge. Character, will lend to those in need. Sentiment, willing to volunteer his time. Physical, strikes while the iron is hot. So I don't know how much of that's actually me. That's one of the things in Haida, as you say, that's one of the things you can't do is name yourself. Somebody else has to do that. Also, you can't tickle yourself. You can't doctor yourself. And for those of you who want to try, you can't lick your own elbow. I saw my grandson do it. So anyway, it's something that really sort of set me back a little bit in a way on my heels, I guess you might say. I spent time listening to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's report, and I've read a good deal about it, and the story is absolutely horrendous. And then we learned last week that Indian Affairs has been sitting on $1 billion they just didn't spend. And they're saying they're holding that for treaty negotiations. And just last year, I don't know, they had a couple million they didn't spend. And yet we've got people living in not only substandard housing, but houses that got mold in them. They don't have running water, or if they do, they don't have safe running water. You have suicide. You have all these terrible outcomes from the residential school system. And yet, our prime minister is over in Europe talking about what a great country is and saying we're gonna those ISIS people are threatening Canada, so we're going to bomb them out of oblivion or bomb them into oblivion, whatever you're going to do. And then they take a look at what they did to us. And it's a heck of a lot worse than what ISIS has done to Canadians. You know, it's so easy to point the finger at somebody else. And from my understanding, the term genocide, they try to water it down so it doesn't sound too bad when they say cultural genocide. But when you take a look at the beginning of the Indian Act, it says that it had two objectives. One, to destroy the tribal system. Two, assimilate everyone. And then I ask myself, what kind of a system or religion creates the monsters that would do the things they did to 150,000 children? And yet we have people still genuflecting and crossing themselves and looking to the Pope as their Heavenly Father type thing. I don't understand. And then for this government, we have a prime minister over there in Europe right now blasting away at the Russians and totally ignoring his own history. And he said the missing and murdered Aboriginal women, it was not a sociological phenomenon. It was simply a matter for law enforcement. So he's trying to play both sides of the bread, I guess. And he wants this European Union free trade agreement. And I think from what little I know about economics is that this global economy is the thing that's killing everybody. Because, for example, if I'm a small, say, apple grower here in BC, and I have a bad year, I can't raise my prices because I'm competing globally. So these huge growers, they can end up, they don't have to raise their prices or anything. They can absorb losses, but the small ones can't. So then the small ones can't compete. They go under. And so gradually, like what's happening on Broadway, I live just on 6th Avenue, not far from Broadway, in Kitts, and I ride my bicycle a lot of times on Broadway, and I'm appalled at the number of businesses that are small businesses that have closed up. They're leaving so that these great big condominium-sized buildings can move in the large franchises. So what's happening to our destination neighborhood where people used to come because of the allure of the whole atmosphere of the area? We have the Greek festival coming up here in June. And if you walk down, drive down, ride your bicycle, take a look at how many Greek businesses are left. I know of three. Maybe there are more. Two of them are delicatessens. One is a restaurant. Oh, and I guess there's a bakery. A small one. So the whole character of that neighborhood is disappearing. And all we have now is we have a government system now that wants to put a subway or underground rail, whatever, to reach UBC. But to do it, they've got to destroy the salmon streams we've been trying to reclaim, to restock. They paved over them in this drive for modern society. But who cares? It's just a salmon stream. Who cares? We got farmed salmon. Who cares? We can change the sex of our salmon just by running electricity through them. Change them from male to female so they grow faster. Who cares? When the animals get killed off, we can always go to the zoo and look at them. Or we can go to the aquarium and look at fish and mammals. Who cares? The birds, we can always pipe in the sounds. So who cares? I don't hear the bees buzzing. I don't see any bees around my yard. And we got a lot of flowers. Apple tree had, I think, 4 blossoms on it. And they just withered away. No bees came. So what are we doing to ourselves? What are we doing to ourselves? I guess many animals have become extinct. Not because of what they did, but because of some other conditions. And it looks like we're well on the way to doing the same thing to ourselves. But anyway, now that I've gotten you all down in the dumps and feeling bad, my name, when I was a little boy, I was given a name, Kaudahangas. Kautla means to sit down. Hangas is something ugly or unpleasant to look at. So my name was Ugly Sit Down. That's an eagle with wet feathers. I was talking to some elementary school children in Alberta. I guess they were grade 3, grade 4, whatever. And this was in 1987, I guess, in Lethbridge, Alberta. My wife was teaching at the university. Anyway, I told them my name, Kaudahangas, Ugly Sit Down. And one little girl raised her hand, and I said, yes. She said, do we call you Mr. Sit Down or Mr. Ugly? You know, that just tickled me. Because it reminded me of, I had a classmate in law school, his name was Robert Fast Horse, and later changed his name to his family name of Grey Eagle. But he was telling me about a man named Fool's Crow, a Lakota man named Fool's Crow. His daughter met and fell in love with and married a Scotsman. And anyway, when she brought her husband home to meet her father, he was kind of nervous. And he wanted to make a good impression. So he walked up very quickly to Fool's Crow, held out his hand to shake his hand. He says, how you doing, fool? The old man almost heard himself laughing. Because we see these things happen. There was one old lady at home. Her name was Hanjat. Han is a whale killer or killer whale. Jot is woman or wife. And my uncle's wife was Cherokee, like first cousin to my mother. And so the Hanjot used to come by and visit. They'd have coffee and do stuff. And anyway, my aunt decided she's going to call her by her Haida name. So when she opened the door, hello, Slanja, how are you doing? And the old lady's eyes got big, and she sat there on the porch laughing so hard she was almost crying because my aunt, instead of calling her killer whale woman or killer whale's wife, called her toilet paper. So you have to be careful with those things. And the pronunciation is very, very critical. And I used to listen to my dad sometimes when he'd be pronouncing words in English. And there were certain ones he couldn't pronounce. Like, for example, he loved that song, Sioux City Sioux. And he used to sing, play guitar, but he could not say Sioux City Sioux. He'd say Shoo Shitty Shoo. And that's just the way he spoke English. Or he'd get the words hood and wood mixed up. The hood on your jacket or coat was, he would call the wood. And there was a place called Hood Bay, he called Wood Bay. And woman was called woman. So it's kind of funny when you hear that. And then some of it, there's no V and no R. So, like my mother's name, Virginia, she was called Virginia. And my wife's name was Reva. And my grandmother would call her Liba. And Victoria was called Bactali, because it's pronounced as a B instead of a V, Bactali, and an L instead of an R, so Bactali. Some people call it Muktali, but it's Bactali. The reason I'm mentioning some of this is there on Facebook, somebody's put up some stuff about Haida genealogy, and they've been looking at certain individuals' family trees, and what they're trying to do is to use the European family pedigree, I guess it's called, where it's all based on the father's lineage, whereas in Haida it's the mother's side, and trying to explain that the word uncle in Haida is not my father's brother. That's my mother's brother, the Ka, whereas my father is the Hung. So my father's brother is about the same genetically, so I would call him father. And all his brothers would be, I'd be called my father. And also the other men in his generation of his crest, I would also call father. But on my mother's side, my mother's brother is my uncle. And the women of my mother's generation of the two-headed eagle crest, all those men are my uncles. And all those sisters, all those women, are my mothers. I would call them mother. And the children of all those women are my brothers and sisters. So when they start putting together these family trees of father, mother, children, and then grandparents following the grandfather, the great-grandfather, and so on, that's going completely off in the wrong direction. Because it should be your mother, your grandmother, your great-grandmother, and the women of those generations. And that's how we identify our families. So instead of being broken into small little groups, we've got huge social safety networks. When I was growing up, I had 12 or 13 mothers. All of my mother's generation, I called the O. And I don't know how many brothers there were. My father was one of five brothers. And then the men of his generation, I don't know how many of them there were, but I would just call them father. And then my aunt is not my father's wife or my mother's sister. My aunt is my father's sister. I call her the Khan. Now that particular one is responsible, like a bride would be selected for me, and it would be primarily the responsibility of that aunt, that Khan would talk to my grandmother, and they would work it out. And so my aunt is the one who negotiated the whole marriage. And so if say my father died and his widow married my father's nephew and he didn't want our kids, we would go live with that aunt that my father's sister's family. And so that's, so we always knew where we were to go. And so trying to explain this, and even the names, like the one man you're talking about, James Edenso, and I said it's important to use his name, Kanda, Kanda. And then it says his mother was born at Masset Inlet. So, but he lived in, they lived in the village of Haokan. And so there was a clan at Haokan called Haokiwi. Harukiwi. That's those who born at Masset Inlet. So you have to know what that clan is, that crest name is, because it has historic significance. And so I was explaining a little bit of this, and one woman got very upset because we were losing sight of where we're going. We're supposed to be talking about this man, James Edenso. But they missed the whole thing trying to just follow that family tree, because you have to talk about the entire society. And then the way those things work, too. Well, I think I'm going to honor my name a little bit. One who hears all but says nothing. I think I'm going to stop talking, because if the good Lord meant for me to talk more than I hear, I'd have two mouths and only one ear. So maybe we can have a little music here, Bob.
Looking out my window beyond the clouds and past the colored sky, searching for a glimpse of you behind the veil where heaven said to lie. I've heard there's a place out there reserved for those who leave this mortal strand. Some have called it Asgardian, Mount Olympus, glory land. Thank you.
That was Where Time Stands Still by Phyllis Sinclair. It's recorded in Ontario. But the reason, it's recorded in Edmonton. The reason I wanted to play this song was, like I said about the Sinclair report, or the Truth and Reconciliation report. In Haida, it said, "The aftermath of horror is a still time." And this is when we can experience the full horror of a horrible event. So what it is, instead of getting caught up in the adrenaline rush of being angry, of being looking for vengeance, to get even, my response to the Harper government holding back all that money, I thought maybe what we should do is the leadership should go out there and call an international news conference and take his apology and rip it up in public. That was my response. But if I hold true to my values, we don't identify, whatever we label something, that's what it becomes. So if I label this a conflict, and we talk about conflict resolution, yes, we've got, in essence, we've got a war going on. But if we look at it in terms of restoring balance, not the balance, but restoring balance, this is where, for a moment, we have to step back. Step back and experience the full horror of what those representatives of Christ did to 150,000 children. Instead of labeling them and calling them monsters, we have to look to ourselves. I work for an agency that deals with the aftermath of this, and my concern is how do we protect the workers from being part of this generational trauma. In our efforts to help people move toward positive life-defining events, we get caught up in that trauma. I'm a part of it, but mine was nowhere near what happened here. I spent 2 years in a Presbyterian boarding school. Of course, we dug ditches. I worked in a laundry. I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to light the boilers. I was 15 years old. We dug ditches for putting in pipelines. There was no backhoe, so we used shovels. That was part of the experience, but that wasn't the entire experience. And then I went to the government school run by Indian Affairs, and we didn't have those kinds of experiences of digging ditches and all the rest of it. But we didn't have this thing, like I listened to one woman testifying how a nun burned her with an iron for something, and then when it got infected, the nun's comment was, "That's a devil in you coming out." And so when you look at the things that happened to those children, look at your own children. Look at your children. There was some as young as age 2. But look at your children, say 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And imagine them being taken away from you and kept for a period of years. So when they come home as teenagers, they hate you. They hate everything about you. They hate your own culture. They hate their language. They hate their hair. They cut the hair off. They begin abusing other people. So look at that. This went on for over 100 years. The stuff in the Jewish Holocaust lasted, 6 years? Yes, there were a whole lot more people. But here, where do you think the numbering system came from that was used to number the Jews? It came from Canada. Where do you think the term the final solution came from? It came from Canada. Where do you think the laws on apartheid came from in South Africa? Came from here. So take a look at where we are. It doesn't mean we have to beat ourselves up. It means if we look at our history, then maybe we're not doomed to keep repeating it. Look at it and experience the horror of having the British Empire round up your children and ship them off to Australia, to ship them off to New Zealand, to ship them off to Canada. Thousands and thousands of children, or the millions of Irish that were sold into slavery. So what happened to Native people is not unique. It's been happening all over the planet. So when I look at all these things, I got to ask myself, do the seeds of that cruelty, are they exist in me also? Sometimes I'm afraid they do. Because I was quite angry and quite violent. And I had to learn how not to be that way. So take a moment and just take the moment to experience that horror without reacting angrily. See if you can do that. And then once we do that, we can start finding our way, how do we climb out of that bucket of misery. And sometimes these bucket of miseries are a little bit different, more personal. And we have a story in Haida about Beaver and a marmot. Beaver we call Chung. Chung just means your front teeth because of those big incisors. And marmot, Guik, were great friends we call Tui. During the winter months, they stayed close to home. Towards spring, they would prepare for the coming summer. Well, summer and fall. Winter was a time of rest for both of them. On a nice spring day, Beaver prepared to visit his friend the marmot. All the ice was gone. The countryside was showing signs of spring. Beaver came to visit with marmot. Marmot welcomed Beaver. Now, like all things, marmot had a beautiful wife. Beaver was attracted to her and lost no time in ingratiating himself, upgrading himself before her. He boasted and held her spellbound by his stories and episodes. After lunch of dried berries and wild rice, marmot and Beaver started out to look for good places to secure food. They'd gone some distance when they came to a lake with a small island in the middle. Beaver had become madly in love with marmot's wife and was scheming of a way to get rid of marmot. Beaver wanted to leave him where he would be unable to get back to his marmot lodge. In this way, he could double back to marmot lodge and take marmot's wife. They both looked out at the beautiful island in the lake. After a while, Beaver told marmot, "There was plenty of food on the island, but I can't swim," said marmot. "That'll be no problem," said Beaver. "You can get on my back. I'll swim out the island with you." When they arrived at the island, they found a lot of food. Marmot lost no time in gathering food. Beaver worked his way over to the other side of the island, and his plan now was to swim back to the land and leave marmot marooned on the island, which he did. Now marmot was alone and could not get home. He could not swim. He realized what had happened. He spent many hours lamenting his misfortune. He should never have trusted Beaver. In the meantime, Beaver lost no time in getting back to the marmot lodge. He took marmot's wife for his own. Beaver told the story that marmot had been claimed by a predator. Marmot, in the meantime, left nothing to chance. He made plans. He wanted so much to get to land and back to home. After several futile attempts, he started to make believe he was doing and seeing things. In this way, he passed the time. It became late summer. In the evening, he made believe he saw stars through the broken clouds. He kept saying, "There's a star. There's a star." And sure enough, his wishes and thoughts came true. The sky became full of stars. It got real cold and started to freeze. The lake froze over, and marmot was able to get back to the land over the ice. When he got home, he found out what had taken place while he was gone all summer. He would now ridicule and punish Beaver and his lodge. Marmot went to Beaver's pond and applied the same tactics that helped him at the lake. He called on his stars to come out. It got very cold in Beaver Country and everything froze up. It stayed frozen for 1 year. There was no spring, summer, or fall in Beaver Country. The beaver people became hard up. They did not gather food. On a nice day, a beaver went out to the air hole in the ice. He could smell the distant fragrance of summer. Not only that, the birds of summer were flying by. He alerted the lodge. It was summer all around, and they'd been punished for what Beaver had done to Marmot. So it said in Haida, when you have a friend, hold on to that one and treat him right. But when you tell this story too, it makes it sound like Marmot's wife had no say in this. But then on the other hand, if she was alone, how is she going to take care of herself? Nothing survives alone. So anyway, sometimes I think that's the relationship we have between our government. They see something, they take it. When we talk about environment in Haida, Aji Wadluan Gudath Kiwang Wagen Shansanang. That means all these things are related and we need each other to survive. And I've been listening to this stuff about, they call it end bridge, but I think we should call it end of the bridge. It's not going any farther. And even the NDP is now waffling. We want to see the environmental report. Baloney, somebody's gotten into the checking account, I think. I don't really believe them. You know, over 30% of all high school students in the United States believe that Canada's a dictatorship. And when you take a look at it, you got to ask yourself a couple of things without measuring it against anybody else. Well, we're not as bad as the Americans. Well, how bad do we have to get? We'll take a look at what's happening to our city. It doesn't matter what we say. They're tearing down the small business, getting rid of them. They're destroying the farmland so they can develop it. Nothing matters. They want to put in more hydroelectric projects. That doesn't matter who gets flooded. And then the government wants to do this Bill C-51. I don't care what people say. We want to make sure our war industry makes a lot of money. We don't care that what people say about us going and bombing and killing innocent people. Well, that's just collateral damage. They declared war on us. We did nothing to deserve that, is what our prime minister has said. But this is after we had people over there spotting targets and whatever for American fighter planes and bombers for their artillery. And then we start sending our planes over there. I've been reading about the Knights Templar, the beginnings, and what happened. The word crusade wasn't used back then. It's a fairly modern term. But when the siege of Antioch, they surrounded Antioch, and they'd been experiencing a drought for about 5 years, so they didn't have much food. And it says that 6,000 of the knights and their soldiers died of starvation. And then once they got inside, they just started slaughtering men, women, children. And they did the same thing in Jerusalem. They used a catapult, I guess it was, to throw huge boulders and knock the walls down. There was 45,000 soldiers, knights, that attacked Jerusalem. When it was over, they estimated they'd killed 90,000 people. And they were killing in the name of God, because the Turks were supposedly desecrating their altars. So this has been going on for over 1,000 years. And again, this is where we have to stop and experience the horror of those acts rather than simply reacting. And when you react, your IQ takes a pretty heavy dive. So you have to learn how to respond rather than react. And anyway, I think I'm going to call it a shorter day today. And if any of you ever have any questions or comments about what I'm saying, please feel free to contact me on email. Haidaman, it's all lowercase letters, Haidaman, at telus.net. So I'd really like to get some feedback, because if I'm going in the wrong direction or getting sick and tired of hearing what I'm talking about, I'd really like to know. See, one of the things I like about working on stage or with a live audience is you can feel your audience. You can feel if something's resonating with them, or you can even feel if you're getting negative reaction. Because all the things I'm talking about are not things that I'm trying to convince anybody else is the truth of my thinking. I'm raising these issues and I'm hoping people will think about them and say, well, I think you got it wrong. Or instead of saying, you're wrong, instead saying, this is the way I see it. This way we don't end up in a conflict. In Haida, if I say you're wrong, I'm saying I am right. I'm insulting you. So instead of saying you're wrong, I might say something like, well, this is the way I learned it, or this is the story I heard. So I give my version of it without saying or indicating that I think you're wrong. And this is the way our discussions used to go, you know, the talking circles that were used, and yet when it's portrayed in movies, wherever you see these big arguments going on. But that's not how it was done. It was always everybody has an opinion, everybody has feelings, but you don't pick sides. You don't say, I agree with so-and-so and so over there, or I disagree with so-and-so and so over there. No, this is what I know. This is what I think. This is what I feel. This is what I've seen. This is how it will affect me. This is how it will affect my family. This is how it will affect my community. And so this is the way things were expressed, rather than trying to prove the truth of what I'm saying. And in that talking circle, the person, the boss of the speaking, would introduce the topic, subject, whatever, and then would offer to the person sitting to his right, express yourself. And this person, one, you had to bury the hatchet, leave it outside, we're not here to point fingers at anybody. Two, speak to this issue from your own point of view, like I was saying. Three, no walking away. No matter how angry or upset you become, don't walk away. Stay here. Keep talking. Four, no stepping on lips. In other words, when I'm speaking, I have to be aware that other people are waiting to speak. And also, when I'm speaking, you don't interrupt for any reason unless I'm breaking the rules. I'm going beyond the topic. But then it goes.
Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Live.
Got it. Okay, we're finally live. I don't know what that was all about, but so sorry for the delay. Let's see if we can get the chat up to make sure people are still there. And no, now my computer's freezing. Okay. All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. So sorry for the delay. We had technical problems and now I'm not sure what's happening. Okay. Am I still there?
You're still here, looking good.
Okay, good. I think I had to close another window because I was hearing something. Okay, so we are here today with Mr. 2020. He is a Neville Goddard expert. He actually, we've been buddies for so long now, I almost forget that you used to have post-traumatic stress disorder. Mr. 2020 cured himself of post-traumatic stress disorder. He was in one of the biggest prison riots in U.S. history. It was held hostage. It was crazy. Maybe I'll let Mr. 2020 tell us, but in that time he's helped himself recover from post-traumatic stress disorder. He's created this amazing business at freeneville.com as well as a bunch of others, and he is helping a lot of other people to focus on prosperity. So 20, tell us a little bit about your journey for those of us who are new to you and Neville Goddard.
Cool. You know, probably the number one thing, you know, just to dive in is, you know, why would anybody want to do this stuff? You know, whatever this stuff is, because, yeah, I've been labeled over the years as the NLP guy, the Neville Goddard guy, the Native Wisdom guy, and I've done all those things, and they've all contributed to who I am today and what I get to do for a living, which actually is a weird phrase if you think about it. What do you do for a living? I breathe, you know. What do I do for money is a different thing, right? But yeah, there's really is something to this whole thing of the attitude that you approach life with. And I'm not a positive thinker, I'll put that straight up front, but it's the attitude that you live from, how you view you, how you view the universe, what your essential nature is. If you take the time and explore some of this stuff, which everyone tells you not to do, you know, school tells you not to do it, church tells you not to do it. But if you're like me, that, or you know, we all get bumps in the highway. And so if I could just give a quick message to start out with, it would be embrace the bumps and take some time to discover who and what you are and what you're capable of, because we really are here on the adventure of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So let's start there.
Cool. It's interesting you talk about embracing the bumps. I was thinking about this the other day and how nice it would be to have grown up in like the ideal household with the ideal amount of money and all of that. But then you think about people who haven't had any struggle. I mean, if we didn't have struggle, we would